It's Tuesday, December 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President-elect Trump wastes no time confronting China.
The No campaign was able to mobilize diverse parties and diverse interests.
European voters decide again for change. Also ahead, Native Americans win a temporary victory, a surprising survey on torture, and new movies for the holiday season. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, who broke with precedent and accepted a congratulatory phone call on Friday from Taiwan's new president, Tsai Ing-wen, on Sunday, on his Twitter account, has raised new questions about the direction of U.S.-China relations. Mr. Trump said, "Did China ask us if it was okay to devalue its currency, heavily tax our products going into their country, or to build a massive military complex in the middle of the South China Sea? I don't think so." The People's Daily dismissed that charge that China is a currency manipulator or is militarizing the South China Sea. It said it shows Mr. Trump's, quote, ignorance of China and warned against an irrational and hasty get-tough policy with China. Bonnie Glaser, senior advisor for Asia and director of the China Power Project at the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that she expects Beijing to intensely engage with the Trump transition team in the coming days.
To figure out whether he was in fact signaling any intent to change U.S. policy toward Taiwan, or whether this was, in fact, nothing but a phone call. And I think they will try to educate him about the sensitivity of the Taiwan issue and the complexities involved. But we don't know, really, what Trump's intentions were.
Vice President-elect Mike Pence on U.S. television Sunday said Mr. Trump was simply responding to a courtesy call from the Taiwan leader, along with dozens of other world leaders.
That is probably the case, that yes, Tsai Ing-wen placed the call, but this was arranged in advance. Apparently, there was a briefing that was given to President-elect Trump about Taiwan and cross-strait relations in advance of the call. So I'm just not completely convinced that there is absolutely nothing behind this. And of course, what we've seen actually today is that President-elect Trump is once again tweeting about China and criticizing China for its manipulation of its currency and also for building military outposts in the South China Sea. So it's beginning to look like he is trying to put pressure on China, and maybe his engagement with Taiwan is to that end.
Does this make the selection of a Secretary of State all that more important?
Well, I think it does. We keep hearing from Donald Trump new names virtually every day of who might be Secretary of State. So it appears that he is not yet settled on his choice. But it does matter who is in that position, because that person is the face of the administration. Nevertheless, the policy itself toward China, Taiwan, and others will be set, I think, by the president.
Do you anticipate any possible change in the one-China policy?
I think it would be extremely surprising if the new president were to revise the One China policy. However, even within the One China policy, there could be adjustments that might be made to strengthen relations with Taiwan.
Bonnie Glaser says such changes to the One China policy could be dangerous, especially as China's 19th Party Congress meeting gets underway in the new year. She said President Xi Jinping is a tough leader and will resist being tested by the new American president, so the world may be in for a, quote, rocky ride in U.S.-China relations. Well, time for us now to check out what's trending on the web. And to do that, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is right here with me in the studio. Hi, G.
Hello, Jim.
Internet users chose Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi as the Person of the Year for 2016. Mm-hmm. Well, what's that about?
So you're absolutely right. The Indian Prime Minister beat outgoing U.S. President Barack Obama, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, and WikiLeaks' Julian Assange to become the online reader's choice for the Time Person of the Year. Now, the Person of the Year is the American magazine's annual issue that features and profiles a person, a group, an idea, or even an object that had the most influence in that particular year.
I did see the magazine and tweeted about it. What's the online reaction like?
Jim, there's a lively conversation on the method used to select the online user's pick. As the name suggests, the selection is based on the internet user's votes. And one of the top replies to the Time magazine's tweet reads like this: India has a large population, and that the voting is not done through the Electoral College. The user named Kenneth added a winky face at the end of the tweet, suggesting that, you know, basically Modi won because of his country's large population. But some Twitter users in India were not happy about that tweet and claimed China also has a large population and that those who questioned the online poll must be jealous. But of course, others were quick to point out that American-born social media networks like Facebook and Twitter are blocked in China.
Indeed, they are. Well, moving on, the ride-sharing app Uber is in the hot seat for some privacy concerns.
Absolutely. So a lot of people are saying that its latest feature that allows a company to track the user's whereabouts, even when they're not using the app, is quite creepy. Tech-savvy Twitter users are reminding their followers to manually turn off tracking if they want privacy, but the overriding sentiment, no pun intended right here, seems to be that it is too much of a hassle to have to manually turn on and off the tracking before and after the Uber ride. Kind of have to agree with that. Jim?
All right. Thank you so much, G. I guess the Uber tracking will show you're going a little bit slower when you're out of the car. You can follow our program's account on our Twitter feed at @VOA_IE. I'm out there as well at VOA Stevenson, and G is at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, tweets and phone calls shake China's view of Trump presidency. Pakistani aid in Washington to build on recent Trump-Sharif conversation. At least 11 die in Pakistan hotel fire, 75 injured. South Korea enters a crucial week with impeachment vote on Park. Japan's Abe to visit Pearl Harbor. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the voanews.com website. And no matter where you go, if you have a smartphone, travel with our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Italy's Prime Minister Matteo Renzi announced his resignation shortly after it became apparent his referendum on constitutional reform Sunday went down to a crushing defeat. Nearly 60% of those casting ballots said no to plans to streamline the country's legislative process. Mr. Renzi, in office for just 2.5 years, said it's clear that his experience of government ends here. And he thanked his ministers for the extraordinary adventure and planned to offer his resignation to the Italian president. Monash University European Union analyst Ben Wellings tells VOA that the result of the referendum is a setback to EU stability, but he believes the 28-nation bloc will survive this latest blow.
Coming so soon after Brexit and, of course, the similarities that there were with the election of Donald Trump, I think people are rightly concerned about it. It will add another element of instability into the Eurozone. This might expose some of the weakness of European banks. At the same time, I don't think it's quite as grave as or as much of a shock as Brexit. I think there are certain reasons that the Italian politics will keep muddling through much in the same way as it's done. You know, we're not suggesting that Italy is anyway going to leave the European Union or even the Eurozone. We seem to see that the device of a referendum has in some ways energized politics, or certainly energized certain sections of the electorate. And it's a clear rejection. So the question is, well, why did Renzi decide to take this path? Why did he stake his own political future on the outcome when, you know, David Cameron's example is so freshly in all our minds? Nevertheless, the No campaign was able to mobilize diverse parties and diverse interests against the idea of centralizing and streamlining power in Rome.
Ben Welling says the next big tests for the European Union will be next year's crucial elections in France and Germany. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on Sunday denied the permit that would be needed to complete the Dakota Access Pipeline's passage under the Missouri River. That's not far from the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. The decision ended a tense standoff between the government and several thousand people who had set up a protest camp on federal land near the construction site. VOA's Greg Flakus has more from Cannonball, North Dakota.
Spontaneous celebration broke out at the protest camp as word of the government's decision spread. American Indian drummers and singers from multiple tribes from around North America were among those helping the Sioux in their defiance of the planned pipeline route. Many American Indian supporters have been here or made frequent visits here since August.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
We've been watching it close, dude.
We was here when the grass was a little bit green.
Yeah.
This is way different.
I've never seen it at this capacity of magnitude of people coming in. And so I'm really glad that I got to be a part of this and to be here throughout the months and then to make it to this day.
Despite bitter cold, environmentalists, representatives of religious groups, and leftist political activists poured into the makeshift camp in recent days, causing constant traffic jams on the adjacent rural road. The confrontation between the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and the federal, state, and local governments began months ago when tribal leaders condemned the plan to have the pipeline pass under the Missouri River just north of the reservation. Water contamination was a major concern for young tribe members like Irian Fox.
If it leaks, then it's going to go through the whole river, and that's our water source. And not to mention all the animals and everything else that's been endangered.
The purpose of the $3.8 billion pipeline was to safely deliver oil from the booming Bakken Shale region of western North Dakota to refineries in Illinois. Some environmentalists see the pipeline as safer than the trucks and trains used now to take the petroleum out of the remote area. The Corps of Engineers says it will continue to work with developers to find a suitable alternate route. Reverend Victor Kazajian of the United Religious Initiative says the spirit he witnessed at the camp will endure.
We have serious, serious issues around how we treat the earth and how we are caring for the earth. And I think that will keep a lot of people there because there's a real sense of community that developed.
But friction between the Standing Rock tribal leaders and people in North Dakota who benefit from the state's energy boom may also endure. And President-elect Donald Trump, who voiced support for the project, could reverse the decision by the Army Corps of Engineers after he takes office next month. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Cannonball, North Dakota.
It's been a big story here in the United States, and if you would like to see some of this, you can just go to our website at voanews.com. Greg Flakus has some great video to accompany his story. A new survey finds people overwhelmingly believe war should have limits and civilians in combat should not be targeted. However, a People on War survey by the International Committee of the Red Cross shows growing approval for the use of torture to obtain military information. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report at the Geneva-based ICRC.
More than 17,000 people in 16 countries were surveyed between June and September. Most were countries in conflict. The others included respondents from Britain, China, France, Russia, and the United States, all permanent members of the UN Security Council, or P5. The survey finds 80% of all respondents in both groups of countries believe that combatants should not target civilians and should avoid targeting them as much as possible when attacking the enemy. The same number, it says, believes attacking hospitals, ambulances, and healthcare workers is wrong and should not be used as a tactic to weaken an enemy. While these responses are encouraging, Peter Maurer, the president of the International Committee of the Red Cross, says the number of people who consider torture a useful tool has increased since a similar survey was conducted in 1999. He calls this development troubling.
The percentage of those who think it is acceptable to torture
captured enemy combatant in order to obtain important military information has risen from 28 to 36% today in the poll. Even more shocking, only slightly less than half of the people, 48% asked this year, believe this behavior is wrong compared to 66% in the 1999 survey.
Maurer notes that torture is forbidden under international humanitarian law. He says torture brutalizes societies for generations and must be made taboo. In another important finding, the survey indicates that in P5 countries, an increasing number of people are more resigned to civilian casualties and believe that suffering is an inevitable part of warfare. This is in stark contrast to findings among people living in countries affected by war. 78% of those polled say it is wrong to attack enemy combatants in populated areas because the risk of killing civilians is high. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You may visit voanews.com for more on this story, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, check us out on Facebook. We're at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Lots of new movies have appeared in theaters this week. Las Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard shares his reviews with International Edition's Lori London.
Nocturnal Animals has been doing really well in the film festival circuit. It won the Grand Jury Prize at the 2016 Venice International Film Festival. And this is from writer-director Tom Ford, whose background comes from fashion. He's not a filmmaker. He comes from the fashion world. But he's created this really neo-noir, haunting, romantic thriller that explores intimacy and tension, that explores the thin lines between love and cruelty and revenge, redemption. It's just got all this juicy stuff in it. And Academy Award nominees Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal, they're a divorced couple who are discovering these really dark truths about each other and themselves. And what happens is her ex-husband, Jake Gyllenhaal, writes this novel called, sends it to her before he publishes it. Said, I want you to be the first to read this. And it's just about this couple that's with their family who gets abducted and terrorized on a lonely, dark, rural country highway. And tragic things happen. And she's reading this book. And so the movie is about not only what's going on in her life, but also what's going on in the book. It's almost like, you know, you're seeing two movies at once. So the movie is just this web of neo-noir thriller that I just absolutely adored. And I think people are going to go crazy for the performances and also go crazy for the story. It's called Nocturnal Animals, one of my favorite movies this year.
Wow, that's quite an endorsement. Well, I know there's another one out for folks that aren't scared enough by the news and they want a little horror film.
Well, of course, it's Incarnate, and this is a take on the Exorcism movies, you know. So, you know, we all know the Exorcist, you know, you call in the priest, and there's even a TV show based on the Exorcism right now, the Exorcist, and you call in the priest, they say a few words, throw holy water on, and the kid's head spins around and all that. Well, this time we got a different take on it, starring Aaron Eckhart, who's a doctor, who believes that these manifestations, these demons, are parasites. It has nothing to do with religion, that they're these creatures that exist just to terrorize human beings. It's a combination of Exorcist and Inception. This time, a little boy, played by Dave Mazou, who plays Bruce Wayne on Gotham, and he's possessed. So he goes into his mind and fight the demons inside his brain. Because when they're possessed, the demons keep the real person like in a sleep state. So he's got to kind of wake them up. So I thought that was a really interesting take. It comes in an hour and 25 minutes. It's really short. It's really corny. It's getting really bad reviews. You know, it's not the greatest film in the world. But, you know, for teenagers, you know, it's rated PG-13, you know, so it's not graphic. I think it's a great date movie. It's short and sweet, and it's a new take on exorcisms.
Oh, yeah. Guys would love a good horror film to take someone on a date for. They'll be jumping in their laps with fear.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we've got the Christmas classic, It's a Wonderful Life, that is approaching a milestone.
It is. It's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, the 70th anniversary. Can you believe that? It's been 70 years. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Jimmy Hawkins, who played little Tommy Bailey, one of the children in the movie. And this guy is an expert on It's a Wonderful Life. He's written 5 books. He goes around the country speaking about the film. He's done so much research on it. I had the honor of interviewing him, and it's on my YouTube channel on Vegas Film Critic. And we discuss not only the beautiful restoration of It's a Wonderful Life, but all kinds of trivia and all kinds of things, what this movie has meant to a lot of people. And, you know, it just wouldn't be the holidays without It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, whether you happen to see it in the black and white version or the colorized version, It's a Wonderful Life is almost a must at the holiday season. Check it out if for somehow, some reason, you've never seen it. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're also on Facebook at VOA Now and on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dave Magnus. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When appropriate and in accordance with U.S. law, the United States identifies certain individuals as crucial to the operation of terrorist organizations. Most often, these are top leaders, or they help finance terrorist organizations. When such an individual is identified, the U.S. government places that person's name on the specially designated nationals list. His assets within U.S. reach are immediately frozen, and he is locked out of the global financial network. No U.S. citizen or company may conduct business with a designated individual. Such is the case of Victor Quispe Palomino, Jorge Quispe Palomino, and Tarsela Loya Vilches, 3 top leaders of Peruvian-based foreign terrorist organization and specially designated global terrorist group, Shining Path. Shining Path, which has been engaged in terrorism since 1980, is a violent offshoot of the Communist Party of Peru. Its stated intent is to violently overthrow the country's long-standing democracy and replace it with a Maoist-style dictatorship. It employs intimidation, assassination, and particularly brutal and murderous attacks on civilians to achieve its aims. These terrorists have massacred entire villages. This includes, among others, Lucanamarca, where 69 people were massacred in 1983, and the subsequent Wallo massacre that killed 47. Shining Path finances itself through the cocaine trade. It taxes the cultivation, processing, and transit of cocaine. It also provides transport and armed security to narcotics trafficking organizations, moving large cocaine loads through and out of South Central Peru. Brothers Victor and Jorge Quispe Palomino currently lead the Shining Path group. Victor Quispe Palomino has admitted to participating in the Lucanamarca massacre, while his brother Jorge has also participated in and directed Shining Path attacks that resulted in numerous deaths. Tarsela Loya Vilches is in charge of the military training and ideological indoctrination of children. She is known to have trained new Shining Path members, often child soldiers, to serve as reinforcements in the group's terrorist operations. For these and other reasons, all 3 have been designated by the U.S. Department of State as specially designated global terrorists under Executive Order 13224. Since 1980, Peruvians have strongly rejected the Shining Path, and what is left of the organization has evolved into little more than a violent, criminal, narco-terrorist gang. By now designating its remaining leadership, the United States hopes to disrupt the group's ability to continue its nefarious activities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.